Why do I keep doing this? Why do I keep emotionally, sometimes actually yelling at myself when memory of some gaffe I've committed pops into my head, no matter how long ago it happened? One example is from seventh grade, when I made a cruel remarks to a classmate on more than one occasion about his horribly twisted and stained teeth. I recently shared here some of my own experiences being bullied. Sadly, those experiences showed me how to abuse others. Oh, I have many memories of my stupid mistakes that wait in line to psychically beat me up. They include the time I followed the highway to a town by the lake to meet my sister for an evening party, but realized I missed the turnoff 50 miles later. I missed the town and the party completely and learned the next day that my sister was so worried about me that it kept her from enjoying the evening herself. Thank goodness for the maps on cell phones, so I don't actually have to ask anyone for directions. But then there are all the other errors I've made over the years while on the clock. Kurt, you're not here, are you? Okay. Mistakes and that others usually wound up paying for, like the bathroom I designed that didn't meet accessible requirements, a mistake I learned of from the building inspector after it was built. I know I'm not the only one who does things like this. Remembering them wouldn't hurt so much if I didn't care about the anger, expense, and inconvenience I cause others at times. So as I get older and rack up the regrets, I've learned some lessons. Whenever I find myself dwelling on my history with such negativity, I say to myself, stop. You've learned something from this. You're not the same person you were then. At work, whenever my colleagues or I make a costly error, we turn it into a learning opportunity by openly discussing what went wrong and how we can make it better next time. What still bothers me, though, is when I can't redeem myself. It would be a miracle if I could apologize to the seventh grade classmate about the awful things I said to him nearly 40 years ago. Noting what a disaster my own mouth would be if I hadn't had two rounds of braces and jaw surgery. As time has changed me to be a better person, I hope my classmate has healed from whatever hurt that I am and others have inflicted on him.
Today's sermon is part of a series inspired by the book 12 Steps to a Compassionate Life by Karen Armstrong. We will have a few copies of that in our bookstore in the library, along with some other new books very soon, or maybe even today. A gifted scholar and former nun, Armstrong has written many books about the world's various religions and philosophical traditions. She writes about their different histories and their common features. And compassion is key to all of them. Starting as early as Confucius and the ancient Greeks and extending to Muhammad in the 6th century of the Common Era, the major traditions all have some version of the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Do not treat an other the way you would not want to be treated. For peace to prevail in our troubled world, Armstrong says, it's up to people in religious traditions to practice compassion, embody it, and promote it. She admits, however, that much violence and abuse and greed and power politics are waged in the name of one religion or another. She said, "You would never know that compassion was central to the religious life. So much harm is wrapped in religious words." She says people often don't want to be compassionate. People want to be right instead. This brings me to the topic today, the impulse to judgment. This is not the same as discernment, that wise judgment needed in the face of complex questions or in the courtroom. I mean the personal kind, reacting off the cuff, dismissing, disdaining, rejecting, or labeling others. Judgment that means turning aside from others rather than taking the time to consider another's experience. Being judgy is a very common habit. For many of us, this habit can be directed inwardly as well. Being unkind to yourself and unfair. Writing yourself off as worthless or hopeless, as a fool or a failure. Both kinds of judgment can operate in the same person. Indeed, we might be too hard on others because we're too hard on ourselves. Judgment blocks compassion. 2 months ago, somebody asked me, "How many sermons will you give in this series on compassion?" "Oh, I don't know. I guess I'll keep doing it until I'm compassionate." I admit that I don't always feel it. The word compassion hangs out there like a goal to aim for, a place to arrive. Sometimes my heart is nowhere close. But in reading Armstrong, I've realized that compassion is not a feeling, it's a practice. It's not a condition of the soul, but an intentional choice you make, one situation at a time. If we make a wrong choice, we hope we'll have more chances to choose compassion in the future. Of course, if you fall out of practice totally, this could take a toll on your spirit, on your sense of peace. Living without compassion could shrink your connection to others. Though compassion is a part of all religions, it's not a dogma or a doctrine that you either agree with or make yourself believe in, Armstrong says. She says it's a method. And if people don't see compassion taking place, if we don't witness deeds of generosity, mercy, and respect, we could lose faith in compassion. We could give up on it. Last month, I invited you to make a daily review of the times in the day when you saw compassion enacted in the world. I also suggested that you take note where there is a need for more compassion in the world, in your dealings with others, and in your relationship to yourself. And I hope those daily observations are sources of encouragement and hope. Armstrong says that compassion is the imaginative act of putting yourself in the place of another. We have to stop and think, is this the way that I'd want to be treated if I were that person? Then we have to choose. We choose whether we treat one another with kindness, fairness, patience. We choose. The Bible prods people in that direction, saying, "You shall love your God with all your heart and all your might, and love your neighbor as yourself." This was a commandment precisely because it wasn't a common practice. It says, choose to go against the impulse to judge, the impulse to reject. The impulse to judge is natural, of course. It goes all the way back to our evolutionary ancestors. It's something we share with many animals, including reptiles. One creature sees another. What's that? Will it hurt me? Should I scamper away or should I fight it? Maybe I'll kill it. Is it food? I better pounce. Our survival instincts have tuned us for quick reactions, for snap judgments. Yet in human relations, our judgments can add more pain than they avoid. Spiritual teachers Fred and Mary Ann Broussat say this: the practice of compassion increases our capacity to care, but when you move toward others with compassion, you are likely to bump into some common attitudes that are just waiting to close your heart again. The usual suspects, they say, are judgment and all its associated isms: racism, sexism, ageism, classism, nationalism. As the holidays approach, some of you may be heading into family or social situations and dreading them. Will you feel trapped into enduring judgy words? Whether it's politics, religion, gossip, or what you should be doing with your life, you don't want to hear those uncompassionate attitudes. Then again, it's so tempting to put others in their place. Maybe you don't know it, but the others regard you as the judgmental one, the one who speaks with disdain of people or of opinions you don't like. Maybe at your gathering, nobody shows any curiosity or patience. In the battle at a holiday dinner, everyone at the table is reloading and aiming their weapons of words. Now, if your social or family situation is not like that, but instead full of respect and care, you are blessed indeed. Can I go home with you? But eventually, in one situation or another of our lives, most of us can't avoid hearing some harsh and harmful talk. It's not easy to deflect it and still maintain the practice of compassion. When I hear judgmental or disparaging remarks, my breathing gets shallow. My pulse goes fast. I don't realize I need to take a deep, full breath. Later at home, I think of a gotcha that I could have said if I'd been less tense. But if I had said it, it would only have escalated tension instead of increasing compassion. Sometimes when I hear an unfair judgment, I merely stare in silence. I don't know what to say, and silence is a good thing. In the face of a mean-spirited remark, this could be the answer: I don't know what to say. Or even, what you are saying leaves me speechless. Karen Armstrong urges us to develop a sensitivity to uncompassionate speech. Notice remarks that are disdainful, judgmental, unkind, and false, and point them out. That's easier said than done, while keeping our own hostility in check. It seems likely that most people, most of us, would say that we want to honor the golden rule. So when we are speechless in the face of hurtful words, first we can pause to notice what we feel. Then we can decide whether we'll say how that person is coming across to us. The way you're talking doesn't sound like the golden rule to me. Next, we could consider asking some questions, such as, why do you say that? Where did you come to think that way? Who told you that? Do you actually know any of the people you're attacking? But still, we have the option of staying silent rather than reacting. Silence can be a way of staying present with another person while not returning the hostility when we are feeling reactive or judgy. In our own silence, when we're feeling reactive, we can ask ourselves those same questions. Why do I think that? Why do I feel that? Do I actually know what I'm having such a strong reaction about? We can examine our impulses and choose whether acting on them would be helpful. choose whether speaking on them would be helpful. I forget where I read this advice, maybe on a bumper sticker. Before operating the mouth, be sure the brain is in gear. When we're feeling an impulse to judgment, silence is a way to put the brain in gear before speaking. 2 weeks ago, a few UUSS members and I attended a lecture by the actor B.D. Wong at St. Mark's United Methodist Church. In the 1980s, as a young Chinese-American actor, Wong had several small roles that were Asian stereotypes. He heard negative, stereotypical judgments about his acting prospects from directors, agents, critics, and patrons. And then he was cast in the Broadway show M. Butterfly in 1988. And this won him a Tony Award and opened his career to movies, TV series, and other plays. He's also a writer and an activist, especially as an out gay person who is Asian American. B.D. Wong calls for an increased level of discussion among folks of different experiences and differing opinions. Speaking and listening, discussion. Yet in the current political climate, he says, people have been given permission to say the most terrible things. His advice, when faced with ignorance or harshness, is to try not to escalate things. For example, when he encounters hostile words, he tries to be humorous, even corny, he tries to be disarming. He says one way to be disarming is to listen. Another is to ask questions. At a playwriting workshop, for example, a writer wants others to provide feedback on the draft of a script. Wong said that the critiques at a workshop usually come in the form of questions. What was your intention in putting that in that scene? Or, I'm not sure I understand that part of the plot. Did you intend for this development to be unclear? The critiques may not be easy to hear or easy to say, but they are not intended to be disparaging. Using compassion does not mean failing to challenge one another. It doesn't mean you won't feel some heat. It means measuring your words by the golden rule. Author Christina Feldman says, compassion doesn't always call for grand or heroic gestures. A willingness to step beyond your fears and reactions can transform a moment of fear or pain. After his lecture, B.D. Wong had an extended session of questions and comments from the audience. One woman recalled the days when former Olympic athlete Bruce Jenner came out publicly as transgender and assumed the identity of a woman and the name of Caitlin. The speaker said, I was playing cards with friends. One of the women went off about that. She said all kinds of terrible things. I didn't know what to do. She could have bolted for the door. She could have screamed at the other person. Instead, she took a long, deep breath and looked at her friend. You have no idea what you're talking about. What you're saying comes across as very cruel, and you need to educate yourself. Then she stopped. She breathed in the silence and allowed what she had said to sink in. B.D. Wong asked the question all of us were thinking, what did the person do? She got very quiet, the woman said. Now, this woman had not let her friend's outburst go unaddressed and then have it bother her for the rest of the day. Instead, she took a breath, took a risk, and said how the other's words came across to her. She was firm, but she did not reject the other person's humanity. She didn't call her an idiot, the favorite insult of online comment boards. But she confronted her. After pausing to breathe, she pointed out the lack of compassion reflected in that angry tone of judgment. Christina Feldman says compassion doesn't always call for grand or heroic gestures, yet sometimes ordinary courage is heroic. Compassion depends on courage. On the cover of the Order of Service is a bodhisattva figure by the name of Avalokiteshvara. In the Buddhist tradition, as I understand it, he embodies the compassion of all the Buddhas. Even though he's achieved the pinnacle of enlightenment, he has voluntarily taken one step down from nirvana in order to care for the rest of humanity. All of us. All of us. He wants to liberate us from the suffering we cause and the suffering we feel by our grasping and aversions, by our judgments and reactions, and by our impatience and hostility to ourselves and one another. Perhaps this is why this Buddhist figure of compassion is depicted with 1,000 arms. He needs those arms to grab hold of every one of us and shake some sense into us. The name Avalokiteshvara means a deity who watches over. Perhaps in his compassion for us and in his love, he uses those arms to give hugs all around. All around the world. It's a nice thought. As a matter of fact, I've read that each of those arms, those 1,000 arms, holds an eye. And this deity has that many eyes, aiming in all directions in order to make sure nothing or nobody is missed. The compassionate Buddha watches over all of us. Now, though this image is from China, in much of Chinese Buddhism and in a few other places, this figure is a goddess called Kuan Yin. Kuan Yin, the goddess of compassion. Most of her images, the ones I'm aware of, have only two arms, but she has flowing robes that promise peace and ease. Like Avalokiteshvara, she has given up nirvana in favor of staying with us, to guide us, keep watch over us, care for us. She notices when we're feeling driven by impulsive judgments and reactions, driven by our fears and cravings. With her calm face, Kuan Yin opens her arms, and she wraps us in her robes, and she nods in understanding at our hurts. She calls us toward serenity and peace. Her warm arms embrace us like a wise elder who has seen it all and who loves us all the same. If you are in a tense encounter with others, she says, take a deep breath. Notice what you're feeling. Choose what you might say and how you might act in this situation. What questions might you ask this other person? And if you are in a tense encounter with yourself, she says, take a deep breath. Notice what you're feeling. What questions might you ask yourself? Now, if you don't own an image of the Bodhisattva of compassion and you don't pray to one of them, you still can be a Bodhisattva to yourself. In a tense encounter, notice if your breathing gets shallow. See if your emotions feel pulled or pushed. Notice if you are judging and wanting to lash out. Notice if you're steaming in silent anger. And recognize if you've gotten hooked. Then take a deep breath. Smile at your humanity like a caring mother goddess. Or give yourself a good hug, even if you don't have 1,000 arms. And then resolve again to take the time to consider the golden rule as you encounter every situation in the days ahead. In the days before us, may we strive to keep the heart open, to breathe deeply, and to make use of silence. As we move one day at a time into the days before us, may we treat others and treat ourselves in accord with our highest values. May we feel ourselves deserving to be held in the arms of love. And may we live in that love and live in that peace. May we treat others and the world around us as we would wish to be treated. May respect, peace, gratitude, and generosity be our guides and be our gifts. Let us choose peace for the sake of our spirits and for the good of our world. So may it be. Blessed be.